Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Not a lot happens to Paul Chowder. Well, not in the traditional narrative sense, anyway. There's plenty going on inside of his head. He is obsessed with predator drones, the origins of the CIA, tobacco in its many forms, and writing songs about mundane things like street sweepers, or this one, Balance Transfer.
I got a letter with a periodic ray. I want a balance transfer, due on a later day.
That's just one of the songs written by Paul Chowder in Traveling Sprinkler, which is in turn written by Nicholson Baker. We first met Chowder, the procrastinating poet, in Baker's novel The Anthologist. Since then, Baker wrote House of Holes, a very funny and extremely dirty book of raunch, as he calls it, about a fantasy sex resort. Nicholson Baker spoke to us last year for the release of Traveling Sprinkler. That novel, along with The Anthologist, is now out in a single paperback called Two Novels, The Paul Chowder Chronicles.
He was having trouble because he was a non-rhyming poet, and he was trying to make sense of this great thing, this confusing body of knowledge called poetry, and he actually, in a great burst, finished that book. And some years went by, and I wrote some other books and essays. And then I felt that I had to come back to him, that I liked his voice. I liked his hesitations and his imperfections. I don't know. I thought he had more to say. And it turns out that his anthology is selling not well, but okay. So he's got a little revenue stream. And it's now time for him to take the next step in life. And what is that step? What will he do? How can he be a contributor? How can he be a better person, and above all, how can he win this woman back he loves, who has this quality of loving kindness that he really wants in his life?
So he thinks about doing a lot of things to be a contributor. He does do things too. He drives his Kia to Planet Fitness to work out and to Quaker meetings, and he tends his neighbor's chicken. He also eats at the Friendly Toast and Dos Amigos and buys cigars at Federal Cigar, which kind of anchor us readers here in New Hampshire and Portsmouth. Thinks about Roz an awful lot and compares himself to a traveling sprinkler. Can you explain that last bit?
Yes. Well, a traveling sprinkler is not as much needed in Maine or where I grew up in Rochester, New York, as in other places. But it's a little tractor-like device. It's got toothed rear wheels, and you hook the hose up in the back, and the spraying part twirls around on the top. And the great thing about it is that it turns a gear that pulls the wheels forward, so it's like a little tortoise that chugs through your garden at a very slow speed. And the question then is, you know, where should it go? And the really miraculous thing, and it was sort of patented in its current form in 1941, is that it goes where you have prearranged the hose, so it follows its own history. It follows where the hose went. So you hook the front wheel over the hose, and then moves through whatever it is that you have to say as a novelist, your garden of thoughts and preoccupations. And then sometimes if you make too sharp a turn with the hose, the traveling sprinkler can go AWOL and get off the hose.
That's what Paul says. He says, I feel like a traveling sprinkler that's gotten off its hose. I don't know where I'm going. I'm unprepared.
Right. And maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe the way to think about life is not to be overly prepared. Maybe it's better to take what the day brings, and maybe it's good if you're a novelist to capture the fact that days are filled with all sorts of very different kinds of things. One moment you're maybe making an egg salad sandwich, the next moment you're reading something unhappy in the news. Then in Paul Chowder's case, and in fact in my own case, maybe you hear a loud noise and part of the barn floor has collapsed, and that's, you know, something that happens, and you deal with it. What taught me about unpreparedness was going to Quaker meeting, because you're not supposed to think up what you're going to say in advance. If you're going to say something, you're supposed to wait and see what comes to you when you're sitting in this kind of amazing consensual silence.
thank goodness for the Quaker meetings, because there is a little bit of rest, we feel, for Paul's mind. He's turning 55. He decides to play the guitar, which I love this. His friend Tim says is the middle-aged thing to do.
And he's, well, yes.
So Paul starts writing songs, and you did write and produce and perform these songs by Paul. Oh, okay, so is this a kind of middle-aged reversion for you, Nicholson Baker?
Sure. I went to a sort of a strange public high school and played the bassoon nonstop and wanted to be a classical composer. And then my first year of college was at the Eastman School of Music, and I was a bassoonist there and a would-be composer and practiced hard. And I actually got a job as a bassoonist, a fourth bassoonist in the Rochester Philharmonic. I had a set of concert tails and a white bow tie, and I played those notes that nobody hears in big Mahler and Bruckner symphonies and things like that. But then I put all that behind me because I didn't really have enough talent to be a bassoonist or a classical composer. And so I ended up going into writing. And that whole period of my life, I don't know, I think I was sort of saving it up all these years. And I gave all that to Paul Chowder. And he says at one point, you know, I've never used the word bassoon in a poem, and yet it was this thing that was so important to me. You know, at some point you have to think, maybe that's worth trying to wind a novel around.
We're speaking with author Nicholson Baker about Traveling Sprinkler. It's a sequel to his 2011 novel called The Anthologist and features the same main character, one Paul Chowder. I'd love to hear you read a little bit from the book. This is a scene where Paul Chowder, he's sitting outside, letting his mind wander on the minutiae of life, as only Paul can do.
My role is to be here in the side yard when the moon is swimming in the deep end of the sky with the tree shapes near it. It's a full 12 feet deep under the night pool, and there's a moon ring down there, and I'm swimming down toward it, and I hear the high vacuumacious sound in my eardrums, and I feel the tautness pulling between my toes, and I'm thankful that all my thoughts are non-sexual and that I can sit here with my mouth open and my eyes slitted. There are only so many nights like this, the middle of summertime, and even though it's late, a cricket like a bartender with a rag in his hand is mopping the surfaces of sound. Just one. The rest of the crickets are silent. Their abdomens are sore and chafed, and they don't want to chirp anymore. They want to rest, as do I. Even this one that I'm listening to is getting drowsy. He goes, chirp, chirp, chirp. And then there's a long pause while he sits and lets things droop, wondering if anyone's listening. And then chirp, 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 chirp. And then another long pause. Birds by day, crickets by night, singing away.
That was author Nicholson Baker reading from his latest novel, Traveling Sprinkler. One other thing I learned about you in doing research, in addition to playing fourth bassoon in the Rochester Philharmonic, is that you were a stock analyst on Wall Street and a writer of technical manuals. And I wondered about the technical manuals. You do have such an eye for these little things and how they connect together. You know, we flow from Paul's shopping list to the size of celebrities' mouths to Debussy. I wonder what your process is for this. Do you write everything down?
I take a lot of notes, that's for sure. And I did, you're right that, well, my first book, The Mezzanine, was partly written as I was commuting back and forth between this technical writing job in Mansfield, Massachusetts. And I would spend the drive down sipping coffee and dictating into a little micro cassette recorder and then transcribing it. And out of some of those spoken dictations came some of the passages in my first book. But I think that what happened actually was that I wrote a fairly detailed account of getting dressed in the morning that it came out in the New Yorker. And there was sort of a description of pushing the button through the starch fused buttonhole and things like that. And I think that the detail of that description was what got me the technical writing job.
Really?
And so it helped me a lot. So I worked for a year as a technical writer, but yes, I don't know that I think any harder about anything than any other person. I don't feel that there's a lot going on in my head or anything abnormal, really. It's just that when something hits me, I think, well, that hasn't been looked at. And the way to look at something is to put it in a paragraph, do your best to surround it with the proper number of adjectives, maybe, and semicolons or whatever you're using. Actually, I've given up on semicolons.
Well, I wonder, how do you know how many adjectives and semicolons? If you do this process of, what is it, you call it speak typing, you know, you were talking about, you know, like just talking into a tape recorder now, maybe just typing. Yeah. How do you filter out all of the excess, and when did you stop with the semicolons?
The semicolons I stopped for these two books, for The Anthologist and Traveling Sprinkler, because they're both very spoken books. I mean, he's sort of a fantasy podcaster. He wishes he were on public radio, but he's too shy to be on public radio kind of guy. What happens is it's a very difficult decision, actually. Sometimes there are many temptations to keep going in a certain direction and keep describing something, and you realize that you are trying the poor reader's patience and that you need to move on to something else.
Well, let's see if one of the other fictional, let's say, obsessions of Paul connects to you at all. He frequently pretends that he is a host of a public radio show. His girlfriend is ex-girlfriend, but, you know, there are still some flames there. Roz, she produces a radio show called Medicine Ball at the very expensive and hush studios of public radio in Concord, New Hampshire. So Nicholson Baker, do you have a radio wish voice like the Exploring the Music wish or voice out there somewhere?
Oh, yes. I'm fascinated by voices. I like, and the way to hear people thinking, the best way is to have just the voice. Mm. I like the imperfections, the indecisions, the moments where a sentence changes course when someone's speaking. So radio is fascinating to me, and I have a fantasy of being somebody who has a radio show or a podcast or something like that. When it comes right down to it, I don't seem to have the follow-through. I mean, but that whole experience of imagining my character, Roz, grew out of my own happy experience on your show in the hushed corridors of that beautiful building in Concord. It's so quiet and everything, and everybody just is doing their thing, and I just thought, this is and the equipment, those beautiful microphones hanging there in front of people. So, it's a fantasy of mine to be somehow involved with radio, but you do what you do. And the thing is, being a writer is a very strange life because you have, in some ways, you know, I travel around and all that, but in some ways it's a very, limited kind of existence. I worked at lots of different jobs, menial jobs mostly, before I became a professional writer at about 30 years old, and I've been doing writing since. So what I've got is my own life, my happily married existence with two now grown children in South Berwick, Maine, and we have a barn and we have a yard. I mean, I'm not off in Borneo. I'm not doing crazy. I'm not seeding clouds from an airplane. So when something happens to me, like going on your radio show, that's momentous.
That was Nicholson Baker talking about his novel Traveling Sprinkler, a sequel to The Anthologist. Both are now out in a single paperback called Two Novels, The Paul Chowder Chronicles. Thanks so much for your listening time today. There is plenty more to hear at wordofmouthradio.org, where you can sign up for the Word of Mouth podcast. It's also available on iTunes. Earlier in the show, we talked to Ben Schott about some of the complex German words used to describe precise feelings and situations, contractions we don't really have in English. How, for example, do you describe the extreme, cringy mortification we feel for someone who has done something terribly embarrassing? Nor do we have a word for the distinct relief that another Halloween is behind us, allowing 11 months of breathing room before the next costume construction or purchase for the kids. What can you come up with? Either the words themselves or situations that are badly in need of words to describe them. Try your ideas out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Join us tomorrow at 2 for our Election Day program on winners and losers. That's tomorrow at 2, right here on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its Board of Trustees,
or its underwriters. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.